monstrous union of superhuman intelligence and insatiable cruelty seemed to him anything but likely on an alien world. He saw in imagination various incompatible monstrosities, bulbous eyes, grinning jaws, horns, stings, mandibles, loathing of insects, loathing of snakes, loathing of things that squashed and squelched, all played their horrible symphonies over his nerves. But the reality would be worse. It would be an extraterrestrial otherness, something one had never thought of, never could have thought of.
This is
Racks and Razors.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Racks and Razors radio show. A brand new year, 2007. I'm Greg Russell Titterington, and this is...
I'm Heath Areta.
And what are we going to be reviewing today, Heath?
The movies we're reviewing today are Slaughterhouse, and we are also reviewing a new movie, Candy Strippers.
Yeah, cheesy party flicks. We're also going to be re-interviewing the Slaughterhouse writer-director, Rick Rossler, too.
Excellent.
What the great news is, we have a radio play, finally, and that's taking time to get together. Heath is narrating it. I am playing one of the characters. And we have a female to host it named Monique.
Who's waving at us from the other room.
But yes,
you can't see
right.
That because this is radio.
Black Christmas. I saw that remake. It was really good. I never saw the original one.
Yeah, we talked about that last show, about how the remakes. And how do you feel about remakes there, Greg?
No more remakes. Please, something original.
Well, actually, you know, people would say there are no original ideas out there. Everything's just a rehash of something else.
Yes. But let's play some rock music.
All right.
This is Racks and Razors.
She's alive.
Alive!
Welcome to a night of total terror.
Thank you.
I must admit this whole affair is giving me the creeps.
Vax and Razors presents Plenty Good News.
Hi, this is Huey Phillips, and we have some horror news for you today. Like what my son did in his diaper this morning. No, seriously though. If you need to be updated on horror films and not horror personalities, such as myself, who have recently taken to daydreaming of hacking off people's heads, well, okay, seriously, I'm gonna give you the news. This is probably why horror films start, anyways. I just read last night that Mr. Disgusting has voted Blood and Chocolate the worst horror film of 2007. If you ask me, it's a pretty strong reaction, considering we have another 11 months to go in the year. I don't know, you can decide whether you wanna watch another werewolf movie where this time the werewolf is tormented between love and loyalty. Actually, sounds pretty plot-driven, but a common plot doesn't necessarily make a bad movie. It's in the writing and how the writer can twist common themes. Speaking of twisted, if anyone has seen Saw, James Wan has his second feature film, Dead Silence, hitting the theaters March 23rd. Personally for me, Saw left a really bad feel in my stomach. Now James Wan is saying Saw was just scratching the surface, and Dead Silence is macabre and creepy? Well, if anyone is into watching people with split personalities play ventriloquists with dolls, give it a try. And now, if anyone is into more of the dark comedy road, there's a movie called Teeth. I don't know if it will hit regular theaters, but I hope it does. I hate to think of myself as sexist, but there's an element of this movie that I'm pro for, and that's that this girl has teeth in her vagina that take their vengeance on someone that victimizes her. How cool is that? The only people that have to fear are the predators that walk into the theater. That's right, sick men might finally see vaginas as dangerous weapons, but then again, maybe they always did. Actually, I'm lying though, because if you watch the movie, apparently there are a few harmless people that get fingers and penises bit off along the way. Well, my bet is you'll rather love it or hate it, but you'll be engaged in talking about it afterwards. The last show I want to discuss with you is a movie called Fido. Doesn't sound like a horror flick, does it? Actually, a friend of mine saw it during the Vancouver International Film Festival and says it's more comedy, but it did pop up on the horror sites. Well, accordingly, it's original. It's a zombie movie based in the 50s where zombies were dangerous, but thanks to the high-tech collars, they become placent, even helpful. There is one loner boy, Timmy, who doesn't trust them until his mother brings one home and the two play fetch. Then Timmy's zombie collar goes on the fritz, and so does the peace of the neighborhood. What's a loner boy to do? Protect his best friend or... The answer lies on the date, March 9th, when you go and see it. And now, I'm signing off. This is QE Phillips with Racks and Razors News.
We have every reason to be afraid.
This is the Racks and Razors interview.
Hello, Rick, and welcome to the show.
Hello, Greg. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Yeah, I'm out in the slaughterhouse. It's kind of like maybe the connection's bad right now. I'm kind of filing away on some of these blades, getting them ready for Monday.
Oh, you're at the slaughterhouse? Oh, okay.
I just finished up Buddy's cleaver because it was getting kind of rusty. I haven't seen him for about 21 years, you know.
Well, Rick, I was wondering, what brought up the idea to do Slaughterhouse, and what horror film were you influenced in order to do so?
Well, you know, I actually started another project earlier, and... I think I mentioned to you that it ultimately went into another producer and kind of got ripped off. And so I turned around. I was a little dejected at that point in time. I said, well, I'll just do a Blood and Gutser, you know, rather than kind of a sci-fi horror. And I'll do it myself. And so I wrote Slaughterhouse. I think if there was any influence, it was just years of watching some of the films, like, of course, Texas Chainsaw Massacre, and other horror films. And I thought, well, I don't like just slice and dice. I like to throw a little bit of comedy in, because I think comedy's kind of fun. And then we kind of walked a fine edge, I think, in choosing the names Liz Borden, and some of the dialogue in it is supposed to be kind of off-the-wall comical. And hopefully that went over, I don't know. But, I was pleased with it, and... I can tell you one thing, that when I went to get my MPAA rating after we had produced the film, and we're trying to get our R rating, that they gave us an X. And I went, what in that screenplay or in the film itself was an X? And the lady just sat there at the MPAA and looked at me while she ate her bag of lunch and said, oh, it's the Blood and Guts where the hand comes off. And it's in real whatever, real 5. And I said, you got to be kidding me. You know, Texas Chainsaw Massacre was far worse. And she says, we can't use other films to go by ratings. And I said, oh, forget it. So I went in, I cut out the offending scene, which was Deputy Dave's hand being lopped off, and walked out of it. They gave me an R, and I never touched the negative. But I guess I got off track a little bit there, but you know, basically, it just one thing leads to another, and we came up with a pretty good film, I think.
Yeah, so I'd seen this movie when I was younger, and then I watched it again a week ago, and what struck me is that for the time period that this movie came out compared to horror movies along the same time, much more intelligent, and I thought the script was not so much comical. I thought it was very insightful, more so about the decline of, you know, the little business and the birth of big business there. And I really enjoyed the fact, especially in the one scene where the new slaughter plant owner and the lawyer are just discussing about what it was like in the olden days at this slaughtering plant and how they felt for, you know, they felt for him losing his business and everything like that. I really enjoyed that about the film.
Well, I'm glad that you you're into the script, because when I was writing it, it went through a lot of iterations. And also, when we got out, we finally found the locations, we modified the screenplay as well to fit the locations, because, as you know, in a low-budget film, you got to make do with what you have in a lot of cases. And I'm glad that you saw those points in there, because those were intended points. And we also had, at one point, the actors come in and they said, hey, listen, you know, the page for tomorrow is not working. We feel we can do better. And I said, okay, you know, they know their characters probably better than I do. And we sat down at McDonald's for an early breakfast, and they penciled out what they thought would work as far as their dialogue, made a little bit more sense. And I agreed, and that morning we shot it, and it was one of the more difficult scenes, actually. It was that long dolly move, where we go from the slaughterhouse and the two men are talking about Buddy and his dad, and they walk across the whole yard there and they wind up at the pig pen. And so everybody was involved in it to some extent, and it worked out pretty well.
What was your reaction when you saw Don Barrett trying out for the part of Lester Bacon?
Well, I don't know if you're aware that we rented a small casting theater in Hollywood. Most of us were from San Diego area, and so we went up there, we found one, and we rented it, and we put the casting call out in the trade papers, and a whole bunch of people showed up. And actually, Joe Barton and Don Barrett and a few of the other actors were not our first choices. And one by one, we began to see, you know, some of the actors came up, they wanted more money than we even had available, and we said, hey, forget it, you know, we're small time at this point in time. And then Don Barrett came up, he was short in stature, and I liked Joe Barton. He came up to me on a street corner and said, hey, is this the slaughterhouse place? I want to try out for a part. And I said, yeah, and right off the bat I knew he had to be Buddy, but unfortunately he was very short. And I figured, well, I got together with the producer, and I said, you know, we can work around all that. But our first choice for Don's part was a tall, gangly type of actor who was like the John Carradine type. And he was quite tall, so that wouldn't work, it wouldn't be easy on us. So our number two choice was actually Don Barrett, and Don was of the right stature, and so we selected him.
How come Joe Barton didn't want to be in the public eye anymore?
No, you'd have to ask him that. I don't know. I don't know why he just left L.A. I think it's because he wasn't getting the types of parts that he thought he could probably, bankroll his family on. I think he had married in L.A. and decided, hey, it's just not working out, and I'm not making enough money. And he certainly didn't make any money doing Slaughterhouse. But I think it happened to him.
What was it like when Sherry Bendorf came in to read the part for Lizzie Borden? Was your reaction like, she's the one I want?
They were wonderful to work with. Both of them were just so enjoyable to be around. I can't say enough about those two men. And I would hire them in an instant for another production, no doubt in my mind. I'll tell you something about Buddy, Joe. When we got finished with his roles, his parts, his scenes, he came up to us and he really was upset. He says, I'm going to be leaving, I guess. And I said, yeah, bud, you know, it's no problem. It's been great working with you, and we'll be in touch with you when we get everything edited, and you're welcome to come over anytime. He was a wonderful man. And he just looked at me and says, you know, I'll work for nothing. He says, I'll help you guys out, haul cable, whatever, because I sure enjoy working with you guys. That's the type of man that Joe Barton is. And he'd be an asset for any producer, I'll tell you that. And, of course, we fit him right in. And he was great. He wrangled all our hogs for us. We had a pen of hogs, and Joe knew how to handle them. As you know, if you watch that one scene where the cat jumps up on the fence and he's schmoozing with his hogs in the pen, that was really Joe. You know, he was in there, no cardboard to sit on, nothing clean about the environment. He just plopped himself right down in all that goo and grabbed those hogs and schmoozed with them while we shot.
On the video box cover, it said contains material too intense for its theatrical release. What you saw in the video release, it showed exactly the same material in the theatrical release. Did they put it on there just so it would grab people's attention?
No, I didn't have any part of that. I can tell you that you're absolutely right. Whatever they saw in the theater, was on the video, on the DVD. We didn't trim anything. We just said the heck with it. No one will ever know from the MPAA, and that was it. We went ahead. If I have only another minute, I'd just like to say to people who might be listening in who are aspiring to do a film, whether it's a horror film or otherwise, that I was doing it again. And, of course, I'm 62 years old now, but I was 44 then. If I was a young man doing this and planning one, I wouldn't worry about the money so much and the financing so much. When we started Slaughterhouse, at that point in time when we rolled, we had $50,000 in the bank, and that's hardly any money. We had a Panavision camera out there. We had a crane out there. But if you're a good producer, you can make things happen. And as we produced, as we shot, and the scenes came up, and they looked beautiful, they're very professional, then we started bankrolling. People came in with more money. And what I would say to a young filmmaker right now is you've got everything you can do to bring things in for a small amount. You've got it in all the equipment, the electronics. I would not even use 35 millimeter. I would use high def video, and I would edit on Final Cut Pro or whatever you prefer, and then make your film. And then sell it. That's the tough part, actually.
Thank you so much, Rick, for letting everyone know about this. Thanks so much for your time.
Thanks, Rick. It was great talking to you.
All right, Greg. Thanks a lot for your interest in Slaughterhouse. I really appreciate it.
Online at racksandrazors.com. Razors gives you the Retro Movie Review.
Easy on her, son. We don't want to hurt her yet. What's your name, miss?
Liz. Borden.
Borden? Lizzie Borden? Well, I'll be a sucking you. The sheriff's daughter? Lizzie Borden? You know, this is almost better than having your old man here. His buddy's something to play with besides himself.
And that was a clip from the 1987 cult slasher flick Slaughterhouse, which we are reviewing for the Retro Review, as we just interviewed with Rick Rossler. Now, Heath, Slaughterhouse, when you saw the movie saying Slaughterhouse, were you expecting it to be a gory flick?
Yeah, I think the problem with it was, is when I saw it when I was younger, it was, to my recollection, a lot gorier than when I saw it before. But the problem is, too, that's the problem when you go back and review anything from your past. It's always not as good because you've seen tons of movies that are way gorier now, because a movie like Slaughterhouse sets the tone, one-ups it a little bit, so in the next movie that comes after, it's like, well, we're not as gory as Slaughterhouse, and the movie's like, we're not as gory as that, so it just keeps getting more and more and more, so... But, yeah, there were a couple of moments, especially the one with that waste removal trough that I found quite gory, and the hand was nice, but...
Waste removal?
That's actually what this painting, yeah.
Played by Bill Burnsfield, when they threw him in. Oh, it showed the guts and everything. That was pig's guts, of course. I was just grossed out when I saw that, because at the time when I first watched it, I was just adjusting to gory slasher flicks like Friday the 13th and A Nightmare on Elm Street. And I was just thinking, oh, gross, this is... I wasn't scared by the movie, but however, I had nightmares of going to the slaughterhouse. But now seeing it the second time, like, I hated it at first, but seeing it the second time, I was thinking, it wasn't such a bad movie, and so I bought it.
Yeah.
I thought Sherry Bendorf did a good job as Liz Borden.
Yeah, she was hot.
Yeah, she had a Jamie Lee Curtis type appeal to her. And there, one of her friends named Annie, the one who played Annie, Jane Higginson, she's done a ton of other films.
Yeah, I recognized her from a lot.
Yeah, she was in General Hospital. And
I'm pretty sure she did a Star Trek.
Yeah, and she also... Star Trek?
Yeah, maybe the Next Generation.
Yeah, she might have done that. She was in, had the lead role in Silent Night, Deadly Night, Part 5.
There's a Part 5?
Yeah, this has no relationship to the Billy and Ricky killers.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it was a story by itself. Same with Part 4. She had the bright looks to be in low-budget films, in teen films.
Yeah, she did. She was a good-looking girl.
And Eric Schwartz, who played Sherry Bendorf's boyfriend, he had that looks to be in a movie like Fast Times at Ridgemont High and those kind of teen films.
No, it was the 80s hair. It was that little bit, the little tinge of a mullet, not quite there yet, but yeah. On its way.
Now, were you upset when you saw that he got killed and he was hanging on a hook? Because you were thinking, he could have been one of those people that could have survived.
No, not so much. You knew he was going to die right when they were wandering around with those stupid masks on.
Yeah, and
you
it
knew
should.
They were toast.
And, you know, Lester Bacon did not show discipline to his son, and so his son goes on a killing spree. And that's what happens when you don't have discipline. Especially when the father's crazy, too.
I think any father who buys his son a huge meat cleaver for a birthday present has issues. I'm sure discipline is not at the top of the list.
Yeah, and I thought my favorite scene was one of my favorite scenes was at the beginning of the movie when the teens were hanging out at the near the slaughterhouse, and two of them decide to stay behind. The actors were, you know, Liz Borden's brother, Kevin, which is played by Joel Hoffman, who was in Pumpkinhead and Slumber Party Massacre Part 2. And his girlfriend, which is played by Courtney LaCara, who has done a handful of low-budget horror films, too. So, of course, they make out. They're a little drunk and all. They decide to tease the hogs there. Oh, that was a big mistake, don't you think?
Yeah, but in their defense, in my younger days in Moose Jaw, when I was growing up, we used to hang out by the old zoo and old mental institution. Where our drinking place is, so it's not that far-fetched.
Of course, they got butchered. I just thought when the meat cleaver whacked in Kevin Borden's head, I was thinking, that's it for him.
Oh, that was great editing, that one part. Just the axe coming down, the editing, and then when they threw the fake head, that was seamless.
Yeah. Actually, I think that was a real head. They used a fake meat cleaver for that, just hit him in the head and just put the blood spray on him.
Oh. Okay, in today's scene, we're going to bash you a bunch. It's okay, don't worry.
And the corpses were real, both real actors doing them.
Yeah.
God, did they look believably dead, didn't they?
Well, it was kind of like Star Trek dead, I found. Not like Next Generation, but more like old one.
It was very disturbing, I thought, seeing those dead bodies in the slaughterhouse.
No, the disturbing thing, now this is what I found very disturbing, is at the beginning when they're going through the slaughterhouse and they're showing how they actually slaughter pigs. That
was real.
Yeah.
At a real slaughterhouse in Oregon.
Yeah, that I found a little disturbing. Especially, like, at the beginning when they show all the little pigs and they're all quiet, and as soon as that door opens up, how they jumped up.
Did you notice one of them was making out?
A pig?
Yeah, it was mating with another one.
No, I missed that one. Good job, Eagle Eyes.
It had a comedic opening. Dun, 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 dun.
The only film is two pigs going at her.
Now, there was an alternate ending. They were going to have a different ending to Slaughterhouse, but they ran out of money that Liz Borden was escaping. Buddy was in the car, but the car turned over, and she was going to throw a flamethrower in and say, she says, I like my pork extra crispy, and throws it in and blows up the car.
That wasn't on your DVD, was it?
No, they ran out of money, so at the end, of course, Buddy has the knife, and she's going to kill her. And I
just like to point out how bad a shot her father is.
Yeah.
Buddy is huge, and he goes to shoot him, and he hits the meat cleaver. Like, come on!
I was just thinking, I hope that he would hit Buddy.
Hey, he was 5 feet away.
Yeah.
Rural police, what are you going to do?
Yeah, and the deputy is... I gotta tell you, the guy who played the deputy couldn't act worth crap, I'll say. He was a total dipstick deputy. Do you agree?
Well, that was his character.
Yeah. He had small roles in other movies like Naked Gun and stuff like that, but I'm surprised he gets work, because he's terrible. But, however, Don Barrett, who played Lester Bacon, is marvelous as the slaughterhouse owner.
Oh, he did a wonderful job. I really liked him.
Yeah, he's done a lot of experience doing dinner theater plays and stuff like that. And he also had a supporting role in a spoof called Hobgoblins.
Never saw it.
Sherry Bendorf. You know, this was a promising career for acting in other low-budget horror films and other low-budget films. And she was in Demon Wind, which we hope to review someday. She's a stunt woman now.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. She's a bodybuilder, too. Like, she's built herself up since last time we saw her.
Just a little beefy.
Yeah, and she loves riding motorcycles. And she's a realtor, too. And Joe Barton.
I'm not going to put all my eggs in one basket. I'm going to do a bunch of different stuff.
Joe Barton, who played Buddy, had small roles in films. He was in Blood Diner. I haven't seen that yet.
You know way too many movies. I thought I knew a lot of movies, but like Demon Wind, what's that like?
I have Demon Wind, so we gotta watch that.
A bunch of demons get together and eat some beans.
It's like it's considered to be an Evil Dead ripoff, but I liked it better than the Evil Dead.
That's blasphemy.
Yeah. So, what would you give this a rating, this Slaughterhouse?
You know, I really like this one. I liked it because it was intelligent. Of course, near the end, like most horror movies, it has to get a little bit unbelievable to kind of pull everything together. But really liked it. Really liked the script. I really liked the acting for what you got and for the time that it came out to and the major horror movies that would have been competing against, and just compare the scripts that they had and the script they were using here. I thought it was very intelligent. I would actually give this one 3 bats.
For me, myself, it was dark and comedic at the same time, and at the time they were using dark comedies in a lot of horror films. Like, it was very much like Freddy Krueger type jokes. Now it was showing typical stupid teenagers, and trying to scare each other, and in the slaughterhouse, the way it looked dark and creepy, kind of like a spoof on Texas Chainsaw Massacre, I would give it 2 bats. Only the reason why is because the story, it really wasn't going much anywhere. But still, 2 bats for them making a film for what they had and making it look shocking and making it look really good with the special effects. What else? Like, Slaughterhouse was rated a turkey in many movie guides. I mean, critics...
Most horror movies are rated turkeys, though.
Yeah. I mean, it's because I think people judge it by the name of it.
Well,
and not,
it also, it only appeals to a certain demographic. People
yeah,
who like
it's a
horror
cult.
Movies.
It's a cult flick.
Crawling out of graves to live on the bodies of helpless victims.
Racks and Razors.
Everybody hates you when you love rock and roll!
Understanding.
We do. Look, Sally was just helping me with paperwork. Look, we'll get a few things done and she'll be
fine. I saw him first. He's mine, you know that.
Ooh, hey, stop it. Come on. Hey, there's plenty of me to go around.
And that was a clip from Candy Strippers, which is our new movie. It's actually basically Lusty Women in it.
Yeah, it's like a lusty invasion of the body snatchers.
Kind of spoof.
Yeah. With more boobs.
Now, what did you think of this movie, Heath?
You know, I actually was surprised. I thought it was going to be a lot worse than what it actually turned out to be. It eventually got pretty bad, but at the beginning with the high school thing and ending up in the hospital, I really liked how they kind of pulled everything together, and some of the acting in it actually wasn't bad. It wasn't until the end when they were doing the whole we have to survive stuff that it got a little weak. That's also when the boobs ended as well.
It was just like saying it had some weird effects with the this kind of slime coming out of their mouth.
The slimy tongue thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a fun movie. You think, oh, there's these beautiful nurses, candy stripers or whatever, pampering you.
Which, I don't know if any of you have been to the hospital lately, but that's just not true.
Yeah. There's some, you know, basketball players that get injured and they're thinking, oh, I'd love to spend my time in the hospital. But they find out these women are killing these people for food, I think. And Nest putting them...
I think it was for food. I think they drank their blood or something like that.
And they put them in webs, too.
But really, if you're going to die, they have sex with you first. So
yeah.
Not a bad way to go. There are worse.
You know, this is a movie that David Dakota could easily direct.
Yes, if I knew who that was, I would say definitely.
David Dakota, he directed the Brotherhood movies, Creepazoids, Sorority Babes in a Slime Ball, Bullorama, all the cheesy horror flicks.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, made for video ones. Except Creepazoids had a quick theatrical release and Sorority Babes had a limited theatrical release, but most of his other stuff were plain direct-to-video and DVD.
Well, I think this one was straight to DVD. I don't think this would have gotten much of a...
No.
...of a theatrical release, if any.
I thought, you know, Linnea Quigley is a lot older, but if she was younger, she still looked, you know, like she did 20 years ago. She would have been great playing one of those candy stripers, didn't you think?
Yeah, probably. I don't think there was actually a big name star in it. I looked up on the line a little bit, and I think one of the girls in the movie was a playmate at one time, but...
Yeah, Playboy models.
Basically.
Now, the acting. What do you think of the acting?
You know, it wasn't bad to start off with the basketball scene where the star gets hurt. I really liked that scene, actually. It worked very well together, edited very well, and it wasn't a cliche. Like, you knew the basketball star who ends up getting hurt and has to go to the hospital and how that pieces everything together, but just the setup of it was actually very well done for a B-cheesy horror movie. The basketball action and tension that they had was better than some of the A-list movies I've seen.
Oh, yeah. It was more like Z-grade movie.
Z-grade?
Yeah. No budget.
That's like Trauma. That's like Z-grade. This one actually had a little bit of a budget.
Yeah, I guess so. Now, the music, it was...
A synthesizer, basically.
Yeah, so basically. Like. You know, just... But it was okay for a film like that.
Yeah, I think they actually had a band sing something, I recall. Yeah.
So now it was space aliens. Now they decide to go to Earth and to take over the world, but first they have to go to the hospital and take over the bodies of these beautiful women.
Hey, if you're a space alien and you gotta take over somebody, why not a hot candy stripper nurse?
Yeah. Now, I don't understand why David Dakota didn't direct this, because this was up his alley. But he's now directing mainly young jock boy kind of films because he came out of the closet.
Well, let's see. Young jock boy movie, nubile nurses and skinky outfits. Yeah.
Well, I'd say that's... Wouldn't you say that's it for the review for the candy stripers?
Well, just about, but we need to give it a grade. What would you get? It's out of 5 bats.
Out of 4 bats.
It's 4 bats?
Yeah.
Okay, out of 4 bats and 2 boobs, what would you give it?
2 bats for the 2 boobs, definitely. All the movies together, yes.
Yeah, okay. I'll give it... I agree with that. 2 bats for 2 boobs.
Okay, so an average movie, which means it's not terrible, but not that great. But definitely a good party flick.
Yeah, pretty good party flick. Well, one thing I think that we should point out just right now, the movie's not Candy Strippers, it's Candy Stripers.
Yes.
It's got a candy stripper type feel in a candy striper type movie.
Castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. when next we meet in Frankenstone. Don't come alone.
Black white beaches vanished away. Purple steps and dark eyes. Radar vision and scope sight. With synthetic limbs and accent. Robot arms reach out. In that moment, hybrid. Set of guesses, all of twilight. In an age that's unknown. Well, this path takes me, I'm going, but I won't be alone. Search for our wanderer. Left alone in strange light. Pacing stairs, flash and vanish. Setting south this winding head trip. Destination. It's a trick of light and shadow, but I don't feel alone.
This has been Racks and Razors, online at racksandrazors.com.